white hot with a my kush roll, 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 my kush roll.
I was like, if I can see the race like that you're trying to portray.
But that's like a recent movie, though, right?
Yeah.
See?
I was like, don't learn. I was like, you're just plaguing the young minds and the young generations out there.
The hearts and the minds.
The hearts and the minds of the generation out there. We just want to give a shout out to you. Stay loud, stay proud. This is Boogie Down Productions.
Yeah, KRS-One's going to come for the checks, bro.
That dude is going to come for this check. But you came for us. Welcome to Speaker Box Seattle Podcast Season 4. : Black Power. This is Frank Massachusetts, aka Poetic Justice.
Man, so you really got me chewing that whole intro.
Well, I'm gonna edit the intro, but
I was chewing up until you started.
And your
anyways, and this is Bang of Smart Fan, which is also cool that you started this episode because I was about to be like, let's talk about something different today, but whatever, we in it now.
But before we get into this topic,
yo,
that Smurf is all ready for, we're going to hit with you with some shameless plugs. Go ahead, Smurfy Durfy.
If you want to listen to this,
oh, go ahead.
Past or future episodes, you can find us on one of our three platforms being Podomatic, iTunes, and Stitcher if you want a one-stop shop for all that, plus some content. And our social media accounts, go on over to our website, speakerbox.com. That is
S-P-K-R-B-X.
S-P-K-R-B-X.com.
It's so good.
If you want to ask us a question, give us an episode idea, just give us some feedback or whatever, whatever, you can drop us a line at our email address, speakerboxseattle@gmail.com. Again, that's speakerbox, normal spelling, seattle@gmail.com. And as always, especially for our iTunes listeners, please rate, comment, and subscribe because we need all that to, you know, get to going to where we need to get to going. Holla.
But if this is your first time listening to us, shut the fuck. No, I'm sorry. If this is your first
time. Okay, J. Cole.
If this is your first time listening to us on season 4, we have a brand new segment. And it's called The Fuzz, Fucked Up Situation Scenario. We'll bang up some friend in Frank, Massachusetts. Where we give you a fucked up scenario. And the only way to get out of it is your in depth knowledge of hip hop. All right. So.
What it will be this week?
You're popping.
Popping, man. Back on top.
You're popping.
My career is really a roller coaster ride, isn't it? Week to week.
Well, this isn't anyway.
No, in my head, I'm
these
one artist.
These universes live independently from each other.
This is one continuous
career.
Yes.
So you just got back from Dubai. No. Oh. All right, so you're popping.
Mm-hmm.
You've had the classic hip-hop story.
Yeah. Wait, what?
The classic
hip-hop, okay.
The classic rap hip-hop story.
Cool. Don't mind me, saying? I'm just gonna snap this real quick.
And by the classic hip-hop story, what I mean is, you had a strong underground buzz, and the people propelled you to the mainstream, forcing it to the radio, forcing it.
By any means necessary.
Bringing the tapes to the DJ studio, telling them play this tape.
Right.
It needs to be heard by the people.
Right.
All of a sudden, you get a record label deal.
Yep.
Number one album. You were easily able to combine both social justice and pop records.
Cool. Social justice and pop
records.
Okay.
At the same damn time.
All right. I'm talented.
Right. It's gotten to the point now you're on your third album.
Cool.
Mega stardom.
Yep.
On a different level.
Yep.
And you were feeling like, you know what? Ever since the first album, I want to get back to that energy where I had it and I was hungry and the people loved me. Okay. And you say to put you back into that mood, you need to listen to some of your favorite artists.
Okay.
But you say, nah, fuck that. I'm big time. I don't listen to tapes and CDs.
Oh, no.
Instead, what I do is I make them perform at a festival that I organize, and they perform my set list. Like, you tell them what songs you want them to perform.
Okay.
And let's just say, personality aside, they just comply.
Okay. All right.
Who would be the three artists that you would want to perform at your festival? any random three.
Oh, okay. Damn, you usually give me multiple choice.
I know, I want to give you open-ended. I want to change it up.
Okay, wait. One more time. Why am I choosing?
So basically, you got a festival that you're like, you know what? I want to get back to the essence. Why I want to start rapping. Why I want to get back into hip-hop. And so you're going to throw a festival, and uh-huh. you can have any three artists and organize their set list. So you'd be like, no, I want you to perform this song, this song, and this song. What three artists would you pick?
Okay, so just three artists?
Yep.
And okay, so I want this
no
festival.
Particular order.
I
no
want
particular
this festival
order.
To be like indicative of my vibe, right?
Yep.
I'm supposed to be inspired from this and inspire the people, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And I'm popping, huh?
And you're popping. So you can get them. Like, you can get them. Like, there's no doubt. It's a phone call away, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm there."
Okay, I'm gonna cheat a little bit.
Okay.
So I'm gonna have some new shit, right?
Okay.
And I'm gonna have let me think.
This made me sound like you were gonna perform at your own festival. She's like, but I got this new album.
And I'm popping?
She's like, I got this new album. You're popping.
Yeah, put me on the set. Put me as one of the artists. Cause I need I can't.
She said
go.
I need all that.
See, then that puts me in a predicament because I can't go before a legend, especially like an icon to me.
Right.
And I don't wanna go in the middle, but I don't wanna open my own shit either. I got it.
Okay.
So I need somebody hot and young right now. This is cheating a little bit, but I'm going to do something for the young people too, because I need the younger fans. Get me like the Atlanta squad. Like, okay, so I'm cheating. I'm just going to get like three niggas that I know can get for like a deal. Give me Uzi, Yachty, and 21 Savage. Right, because I'm popping.
Wait,
so I got...
wait,
that's not my three.
That's not
just
a group.
No. I know, but I'm calling them the Atlanta niggas. So technically, yes, it is a group.
The 21 Uzi yachts. 21 Uzi.
Okay, no. Okay, fine.
Uzi yacht.
Fine,
21.
Fine. Take off 21 Savage. But I could. We can consider.
Uzi yachts.
We can consider Uzi and Yachty one person because most people can't separate.
I actually don't know the difference.
Okay.
I really thought it was
so we'll just have those niggas there.
Just like Chris Brown and what's his name? Kid Ink. Like Chris Brown and Kid Ink. It's the same person.
Wait, I don't know if I want to do that. I lied. It might be like Bobby Shmurda, Pusha T, and Nas. And I'm going to get Bobby Shmurda out of jail.
Wait. So did we list six people now? Now we have six people.
It's a festival.
Was three.
And then what I'll do is,
it's a festival.
Since I can't perform, like I want to perform in my own shit because I want to be inspired by the people, you know what I'm saying? But I can't like go on after the legend. So I'll just go on with Nas because me and Nas are going to have like a song that kind of revived Nas's career a little bit. Like the young people, you said I was popping, man. So anything is possible.
There is so much shade going on right now.
Or no, no. We'll do take out Pusha T. Bobby Shmurda, if I could get Bobby Shmurda out of jail, that would be so like, that would be inspiring to the people.
So
like,
Jay-Z brings MJ. And you bring Bobby Shmurda. Is that what you're telling me?
Wait, Jay-Z brings who?
Remember when Jay-Z brought Michael Jackson to Summer Jam?
Michael Jackson to Summer Jam?
Yeah, he brought Michael Jackson to Summer Jam.
No, that's not a thing.
That's a real thing.
I think you just made that up.
No, that's a real thing. You can look it up, but go ahead.
So yeah, no, I think it's going to be like Bobby Shmurda, take out Pusha T, do like Kendrick and all of TDE, right? Because I could get them not for the low, but I'm popping, right? And then Nas, but then we'll do the song that brought back Nas's career. I told you should have gave me multiple choice. Like, if you leave it up to me, anything's possible. Like, fuck it. Like,
and this is why
bring back,
nice
bring
things.
Resurrect DJ Screw from the dead.
She's like, because I'm popping, right?
Because I'm popping.
You know what's fucked up is that I feel like I've been saying you fell off so many times now that I've given you your it's popping, you're like, I'm gonna take full
fucking advantage, bro.
Just like, because I've fallen off for a while. It's been 3 weeks.
But see, then I would throw this festival and it would be so like, what? Then I would that, fall off again.
I'm pretty sure by next week. I'm like, what happened? You fell off.
People didn't see your vision, man. They didn't see it. No, I think honestly though, like say I did have like a festival, man. don't tell me niggas want to be hype. If like there was like no like announcement, nothing, and just Bobby Shmurda's on stage, bro, he was in jail. People would be hype. That would be kind of an inspiring moment. Like, yeah, you may have shot someone in the face, but maybe you too. But maybe you too could be on this concert stage.
And that was the first fucked up situation scenario with Vegas Perfect in Prague, Massachusetts. All right. I don't even know how to segue from that. We're just going to be like, so what do we talk about today? All right, fine.
So, you already knew you fucked up.
What we're talking about today is a very polarizing and somewhat controversial topic. Was, and that is,
it's black. It's still not too late to change the subject.
It's Black Lives Matter.
Okay, all right.
Why do you want to change the subject?
Because I'm drunk.
Listen.
And this ain't one of those episodes.
No, I got you. We're going to, because it's,
we got a guest. Is somebody going to call me?
No. Because I've noticed that when we touch very sensitive and polarizing topics that people feel sensitive and whatnot. So I actually came somewhat prepared. And all we're going to do is talk about these various clippings from various news articles in regards to the Black Lives Matters movement. And we're just going to discuss the articles. That's it. Just little excerpts and just talk about what we want to talk about from all aspects of Black Lives Matters.
I want you guys to understand that this is like a monumental like development in the life of this podcast. Because when I tell you Frank be top of the dome 99% of the time, so for me to look over and see that he has like he went to a desktop computer.
I didn't go to. I log on to a desktop computer. Continue.
And then he went to the library to print out the documents. So, you know, and look, I'm proud of you, man.
Thank you. And it's good that you're litty, because now we can get your raw and honest opinion, because this is a very polarizing topic. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but I don't want to like add too much levity to a very serious topic. But, you know, I'll try to keep it together.
No. We can.
Or maybe I'll get angry drunk.
There we go. And then you'd be like, hey, you know what the fuck is wrong with the man? And I'm like, oh, I'm here for this. Let's hear all of this. All
right, man.
All right. So first, let's just start off. So when you think of Black Lives Matters, like what are your first impressions of the movement, the social media hashtag? All of that.
I'm just here for it, like all the way around. Like, okay. I love what it embodies. I love the overarching message. I hate that we have to explain to people that just by saying Black Lives Matter doesn't mean that we're talking about you. Mm-hmm. Talking about anybody over there. Mm-hmm. We just, the current state of affairs and the current climate in this nation and really in other places globally, we have to remind y'all that indeed Black lives do matter. And I also think that it's a great, great way to tease out the racists, which is like an added bonus, because as soon as you say Black Lives Matter, there's some racist motherfucker who comes out from under a rock to tell you that all lives matter. So I'm just here for it, I guess. I just think that it was something that was needed. And I like the social media component of it. Mm-hmm. Just because it's, I mean, I know people talk about social media activism and whatnot, but I think that there is value in awareness. And I think the whole movement has done way more than anything in my lifetime to raise awareness to real issues in the Black community and really race relations within the United States.
That's dope. I would say my thoughts on it are very much on par with yours. Like, I echo a lot of the sentiments that you said. And I think it's important for every generation to kind of tackle the topics of their generation, right? Mm-hmm. Ours just happens to be police brutality. Not that it's a new issue, mm-hmm. but we're approaching it a different way. Because right. It feels like, even though it was happening, we stopped talking about it after a while. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we should never stop talking about the abuse, both mentally and physically, of the African-American people by hundreds of years of oppression, right?
Right.
And so how that's perpetuated and how it's continued, it still needs to be identified, because it's still affecting people. We're not that far removed from slavery.
Right.
Right? So, no, I think it's dope. Have you been to the Black Lives Matters website?
The official.
Okay, cool. What was interesting enough is that I've never actually researched Black Lives Matter. So when I researched it, I was like, this is very interesting. It's kind of like what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And then there were some aspects of it. I'm like, huh, interesting.
Specifically, like what?
Oh, no. We'll just get into it. Oh, okay, like, okay. Yeah. So do you know who started the Black Lives Matters movement Black Lives Matter.
I don't know if he started it, but I know DeRay is a huge piece of it, but I don't know if he was the founder of it.
No, no. So it happened to be, correct me, I'm sorry for butchering some of these names. I'm terrible with pronunciation of names. I'm terrible with names in general. Like, if mm-hmm. you tell me your name, I just forget it. I don't care. So we have Alicia Garza, Patrice Collins, and Opal Tamidi.
Okay.
So they created Black Lives Matters in 2012 after Trayvon Martin's murder. This is on their official website. This is what it says. So Trayvon Martin's murder by George Zimmerman, who was acquitted for his crimes, and dead 17-year-old Trayvon was placed on trial for his own murders. Rooted in the experience of Black people in this country who actively resist our dehumanization, Black Lives Matters is a call to action and response to the anti-Black racism that permeates our society. Black Lives Matters is a unique contribution that goes beyond extrajudicial killings of Black people by police and vigilantes. So that's their mission statement.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So yeah, let's talk about that. Do you remember like where you were or how you felt when you heard the results of the Trayvon Martin trial? Like, do you remember that?
I think at least everybody in my circle, like my family and my friends and stuff, I remember being hopeful when the case first started. Mm-hmm. But then just watching the case and seeing like the events that unfolded and really what was going on in the media too, how they really put a dead minor on trial.
Right.
And completely had all of these discussions about his character based mm-hmm. on one photo. Right. And really dehumanized, again, a child.
Very much so.
By the end of it, I had already prepared myself that this man was going to walk.
So you saw it coming?
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Because you thought they painted enough picture to where...
Yeah, and then you would go on, and I know it's not... It's I don't even know if it like is indicative of real-world climate, but just the responses that I saw anytime, because you know it really dominated social media. Like, there was discussions everywhere, and on news articles online in the comment section, it was just like everyone was just stating the same thing. He's a thug and whoop de whoop de woo, and really had no comments for this average white
child.
Well, no, I'm talking about George. Fuck him. I don't even want to say his name. Like, hope right. he fades into obscurity and lives a miserable life for the rest of his life. But had nothing to say about a grown ass man who was working security guard. You know, hunting and killing a child.
He was on Neighborhood Watch, right?
Yeah, I think he was I don't think he was like a part of the community. I remember mm-hmm. him being in like some sort of like paid like security mm-hmm. who stalked and murdered a child, and yet there was no conversation about him mm-hmm. and his actions. And so it was just like, yeah, by the end of that trial, it was just like, I wanted it to be different, but that I think that was the moment when that came back. I was like, oh yeah, like this is just confirmed. I think everyone or most, well, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of people in the Black community already suspected that this, we haven't really made any progress. I mean, I guess overtly, like, you know, we can drink out of the same water fountains right. and like those types of things. But as far as like real personal feelings on race, like, we haven't really made any changes as a nation.
Yeah, I would say it's in terms of safety, like, right? It's like, no, as African Americans, we still don't feel safe.
No,
like,
whatsoever. Not at all.
We still feel prosecuted. We still feel like we're hunted almost, mm-hmm. right? And it was evident right there.
Yeah.
And I think that was important, right? I think clarity helps a lot for African Americans, right? Because I feel that sometimes you go through life and you get these feelings of, I feel like people are watching me, they're judging me, they're, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then you start to feel schizophrenic because you may not have any real evidence to support it, but it's just a vibe, right? Mm-hmm. So then when you see something like this, when you see someone who was clearly murdered in cold blood, get off.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the fact that they were able to portray this child as a stereotypical thug that you would see on television, mm-hmm. that was good enough, as opposed to the hard evidence, right. phone call included, of the officer saying, please do not approach the child, to get off. It's like, no, this is a reality. This isn't just me. I think it's cathartic in that regards, but then it's also very sad and disheartening. It's like, wow, I wish I was wrong.
And I think it was out of, you know, there's been a lot of these cases that have come up that have been just heartbreaking. And it's just like, why? Like, you know, they really don't value Black lives in this country. But I think the piece that stood out for me, too, is that you know, we usually know the game when a cop is involved, like what it is and what it ain't. Right. But this wasn't even a cop. Like, this was just like a random man, you know what I'm saying, that had done this. And I thought that removing that blue shield of protection would then kind of people would focus on, you know, the issues at hand. Like, right. A layperson did this, and that didn't even matter. So,
right. So it's like, it is what it is. All right, cool. Yeah. Right? We now know. It goes on to say in the website that when we say Black Lives Matters, we are broadening the conversation around the state of violence to include all of the ways in which Black people are intentionally left powerless at the hands of the state. We are talking about the ways in which Black lives are deprived of our basic human rights and dignity. Hashtag Black Lives Matters doesn't mean your life isn't important. It means Black lives, which are seen as without value within white supremacy, are important to your liberation. Black Lives Matters is an ideological and political intervention in a world where Black lives are systematically and intentionally targeted for demise. It is an affirmation of Black folks' contribution to society, our humanity, and the resilience in the face of deadly oppression. So that pretty much aligns how you feel?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, like, all, shout out to Boondocks. Like all Black people do, when you want to learn something, you go to Wikipedia. So I was like, okay, that came from the website. What does Wikipedia say, right?
Yeah.
Shout out to the guy updating Wikipedia pages.
I don't know. Stay on your grind.
Stay on your grind, CLZ87. Wikipedia says, the phrase Black Lives Matters can refer to a Twitter hashtag, a slogan, a social movement, or a loose confederation of groups associated for racial justice.
Shade.
I'm reading exactly what it says. It says, as a movement, Shade. Black Lives Matters is a decriminalized and leader, or decentralized, oh, sorry. As a movement, Black Lives Matters is a decentralized and leaders have emphasized the importance of local organizing over national leadership. Mm-hmm. Activist D. Ray McKinson has commented that the movement encompasses all who publicly declare that Black Lives Matter and devote their time and energy accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So according to Wikipedia, I made it phrase it like this is a group in which you don't have any qualifications to be part of the movement. Did you get that? Like, it felt like that's what they were really focusing on was the fact that it's leaderless and that it's decentralized.
I don't think that is like a one-to-one with not having any qualifications. Like,
okay.
A lot of these people, and I don't think that you need to, like, just hearing some of the stories of various activists, it sounds like, especially I know that there was a lot of born from the whole Ferguson incident, that there was just a lot of people who had, you know, who were conscious, who were aware of things going on in the country, but really being on like the front lines in Ferguson and other places where, you know, there was rioting and civil disruption, that it really, they kind of found their calling and their purpose in that. And I think that genuine, I have to do something, and taking a leadership mantle, but not having that old timey civil rights, where there was a face to a movement, I think it has its pros and cons, but I at least feel like in the people that at least I associate with the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, the handful of activists that I know, and I'm sure that there's a whole bunch more, but the ones I've seen on national platforms and whatnot, it just seems like they're genuine, where some of our older established civil rights leaders, I have always, and I think that other people, especially younger people, have question their sincerity from time to time.
And their motives, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I wish there was more of a balance with that. And maybe a little bit more, I mean, it's not as bad as, remember, Occupy Wall Street, like how it was just like random people like...
I want you to hold that.
Falling into the street.
I want you to hold that. They actually do talk about that.
Okay. So I know it's more organized than that, but I guess having a more like national presence, Seems like it would be nice, but I definitely understand that there's more value in having a lot of smaller groups who are really, really engaged in their local communities, working for the specific issues of their communities, because what affects us here in Seattle might not be an issue for people in, you know, Mobile, Alabama. Like, there might be different, socioeconomic issues or
just circumstances.
Right. So it's good to have that grassroots community to community organizing.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. But like I said, just when I read that, I was like, they're really focusing on the fact that it's decentralized and there's no leader. But you don't feel that way. You feel like that's a positive just because of things are different. Like you said, things are different in Seattle as they pose.
I see the value in that approach.
Right.
I think the plus of being something that was hashtagged is that you still do have that kind of wider, that wider scope and presence, mm-hmm. on a national platform. So you don't really need, some national headquarters somewhere that everything comes out of. So, I think it's working. And I think that a lot of the leaders and, you know, the local leaders in the movement have, identify that there are things that they do need to improve upon, like activism isn't the only approach. So I think that it's different times, and mm-hmm. what may have worked in the past may not work now. And so I think that they're developing approaches that are working for this time.
Right. The situation has changed, so you need to mm-hmm. change your game plan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I get you. Did you know that there was a Seattle chapter of Black Lives Matter?
Only because I went to one of the events. So.
Oh, you did? How was it?
I'm just going to give...
Shout out to KRS-One.
I guess I'm just going to give my personal thoughts on protests in general,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is especially... Actually, it speaks to one of the major issues in Seattle.
Okay.
I feel like all of the public protests that I've gone to, like, while they have started out well, and it seems like they initially had, like, a focus and were organized, events like that seem to bring out a certain population of mentally ill people.
Okay. Talk
which,
about it.
I mean, just in the events that I've been to, like, especially when there was, like, an open mic where people could come and just, you know, raise their thoughts, there was definitely, it was a wide open forum, which I think it should be. I don't think you should just, you know, screen people or whatnot. But there was a component of people who just seemed, I don't know if they planned on going there, but there was a disruptive nature based on at least appearing, you know, I'm not a physician or I don't treat people, but it seemed like there was a certain subset of the people that showed up who had, you know, seemingly mental illness. And not to say that they can't be a part of the movement. It just seemed to be kind of a disrupting factor to the ones that I go to. So,
and do you think it took away from the event?
I think so. I think it derailed certain aspects. There was one that I went to that was like part march, part public kind of open forum. And the march was fine. The open forum got a little derailed a little bit.
If you give anybody a live mic, like,
yeah, I mean, that's just the
box.
Thing. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I'm not saying that that's, you know, the norm. And I do think that our state has a problem mm-hmm. with that. And it might be.
And that's
know,
a homeless problem. Like, we have a huge.
It's not just homeless.
Here.
It's also treatment. It's a treatment issue,
true.
Resource issue.
True.
And I think, you know, I'm a firm believer in the concept of intersectionality, that that these things don't live in isolated boxes. And so I think overall the events that I've been to have been productive, but also I think that there's opportunities there as well.
Okay. Awesome. So one thing that I was thinking of when they were talking about decentralized, I was like, yeah, but we have chapters. And I was like, I don't know who the leader of my chapter is. So do you know who it is before I say
no
it? Okay. So the person's name is Marissa Johnson. And Marissa Johnson, this is according to Wikipedia as well, is a Seattle, Washington resident who attained notoriety when she interrupted U.S. presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
At, I, you remember
no,
that?
No, the thing about it is that when I started reading that, I was like, her!
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So presidential candidate Bernie Sanders at an August 2015 rally in Seattle. Her activism has been associated with Black Lives Matter movement. She is the founder of the Seattle-based justice group called Outside Agitators 206,
okay.
which was disbanded when she became a co-founder of the Seattle chapter of Black Lives Matters in September 2015. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was like, that's cool. Now that I know that. I felt bad that I didn't know. But then I didn't know her name, but I knew who she was. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like
no,
when they described the event, I was like, I remember that event.
Yeah, and I think it's too, I again, taking that emphasis on leaders in the movement, I don't think that you have to have someone that you know names and whatnot. It's more of like the goals and the mission of it. But that is interesting. I had no idea. I do remember that moment, though.
Right, right. And we were like, yo, she was at a kill. The reason why I knew her is because Killer Mike went to go speak at the UW and we were there. Mm-hmm. And she was there front row, right? Mm-hmm. And you know how Killer Mike was going hard for Bernie Sanders. And I was like, oh, here we go. She's going to roll up on Killer Mike. But Killer Mike was ready for it. He was staring dead in her eyes the entire time. He was like, say something. We can have this conversation.
How did you feel about about her interrupting Bernie Sanders?
It was one of those things where it's like, listen, I get how you feel and you have very valid points.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that especially in the last election, people were just looking for distractions to mm-hmm. detract you from the real issues of what people are actually saying or what they're trying to provide, mm-hmm. right? And trying to make it more of a circus than a real respectable party. And so when that happened, I was like, I get what you're doing, but the way that they're flipping this is making it seem like his campaign isn't credible. You see what I mean?
No, I get
because you. Because was he right to just hand her the mic and say, hey, do what you need to do, say what you need to say? Absolutely. But because it wasn't presidential at the time and the person who was currently getting steam was known for being more aggressive and a bully, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, okay, we see how you're flipping this, how you're leveraging this. And mm-hmm. so it's like, I get what you're saying. I think it was just bad timing, bad place, wrong camera. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. somebody just had to get that incident and from that angle and somebody made it from that perspective. So that's just how I felt. But yeah, so I went to the New Yorker. And according to them, they had some criticism of the movement.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, okay, let's go to the other side of the pendulum. What does the other side say, right?
And I swear to God, if you have a quote from like Fox and Friends, like I'm punching you in your face.
Not close. I may be getting punched in the face in this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Prepare for that. It says, almost from the onset, Black Lives Matter has been compared to the Occupy movement, like you were saying before. Occupy was similarly associated with a single issue, income inequality, okay? Which it transformed into a movement through social media. It focuses on the 1%, played a key role in the 2012 election, and is likely contributed to the unexpected support of Bernie Sanders' campaign. And, damn, I should have separated this better. To the movement's critics, wait as I turn the page. Flip over to side B. It says, however, its achievements fell short of its promise.
Are they talking about Occupy Wall Street?
They're talking about Occupy Wall Street.
It said
it seemed to prove that while the internet can foster the creation of the new movement, it can just easily threaten its survival. They go on to say Black Lives Matter would appear to face a similar concern through in recent media. The movement has tracked in new directions, but yeah, it says through recent months, the movement has tackled a new direction. In November, the Ella Baker Center received a $500,000 grant from Google for Patrice Kohlers to further develop a program to help California residents monitor and respond to acts of police violence. That's dope. Did you know about that? Did you know that somebody got awarded that?
Mm-mm.
I didn't either. I thought that was cool. So I'm curious, though. So they were talking about money, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, if they're talking about money and if somebody wanted to donate to Black Lives Matters, like mm-hmm. how does that work? Because we're decentralized, right? So I'm like, so we can't really invest money into the movement. Like
you can invest in your community though. And that sounds like what Google was doing. So based out of California, I got you.
So they were like, you support the movement and the terms of what Black Lives Matter means in their mission statement. But you do that through your own way, like your own avenue, and you just declare it. Is that what I'm getting then?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could donate to your local chapter. You could devote to an organization, or you could donate to an organization that has a similar mission or is taking or is acting upon, you know, tenets of the Black Lives Matter mission statement. It sounds like this is what was happening in that, because they said that they donated it to the Ella Baker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me make sure I get this right. The Ella Baker Center. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like somebody who was, you know, doing their own, you know, a part of an organization that was doing social activism that had a lot of the same goals as Black Lives Matter. So
okay. All right, cool. To further the criticism, I went to CNN, and they actually did an article on specifically why it will fail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool, this came out. So they said, the movement's decentralized form of leadership, though, can hurt it when responding to crisis. It says, who does the media go to when protesters invoking Black Lives Matters burn a police car or chant pigs in a blanket? Who speaks for Black Lives Matters when it has 37 chapters nationwide that list various goals and mission statements? And then they go on to have someone quote, yeah, when something tragic happens, we're all blamed because no central leadership. We all take the hit. That's kind of a good point. You know what I mean? I get what they're saying.
I think all Black Lives Matter associations and groups around the country would be blamed regardless of anything. Like,
okay.
Let's be real. If there was a central, you know, if in D.C. somewhere there was a Black Lives Matter headquarters and something happened in New Mexico, every local chapter will be blamed. It will be associated mm-hmm. with Black Lives Matter. That does not change with national leadership. So.
Right. No. I hear you. One thing that I did think, though, I was like, well, yeah, you guys should all have the same mission statement. Like, if you're a chapter, because I'm thinking like franchising, right? Like, McDonald's food tastes the same no matter where you go. So that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, well, that would be good if they like.
I mean, it makes sense, but you have to understand that a lot of people who have taken leadership roles in this movement are still learning about, you know, tried and true and formal social activism methodologies and whatnot. So it's something that they're definitely working out the kinks.
Mm-hmm.
And there are opportunities. I don't think anybody that I've heard that is involved in Black Lives Matter or social activism when it comes to Black issues has said that they have it figured out. You know, it's something that is learning and developing. And I think that's good because other movements like Occupy Wall Street completely fizzled out. Like there was no improvement measures taken.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you see, like currently you see a lot of these people who are vocal in the community and the movement trying to take up or trying to run for office, trying to get legislation passed. And so I think that it's a work in progress. And so, I mean, the criticism is there, but at the end of the day, it's a real issue.
Right.
And I think a lot of the people that did take responsibility for being a face of the movement, again, these weren't professional activists. These mm-hmm. were people who stumbled onto the street like everyone else and saw something that completely outraged them. And so, like, let's give them time to work out the kinks, especially because they're doing something. They're propelling a movement that that hadn't previously been propelled to this magnitude. So, like, instead of just offering up criticisms and predicting its failure, like this particular article did, I mean, I just think that's just ridiculous. Like, social movements start from somewhere, and it's not perfect. So mm-hmm. there will be these ups and downs, but it's still here. It's still something that we're all talking about. So. Yeah.
And then even when you think about its origins, it's like we were just responding to something that hurt and affected the entire Black community. And it really justified a lot of the prejudice that we've seen in our personal lives. Like we saw it visually happen. Right?
I mean, this is something that has affected like all of us in one way or another.
Exactly. Right. Like everybody has had that experience and it was very organic. Right. So mm-hmm. I feel like then how it's going to evolve is going to be organic as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's not like these three people. They said, okay, we're going to set up an institution. Here are the rules, the guidelines, the constitution. Mm-hmm. Here's who we're hiring. You know what I mean? They didn't go with it like that. It was just like, here, I'm putting this out there. I'm putting this feeling out there. And that's mm-hmm. what Black Lives Matter is. It's a feeling. It's that solidarity between all of us here. Like, even though we're spread all across the country, it's like we're connected by that statement.
And I think that it's also good that, I see the pros and cons from each argument. I think that allowing these various chapters to kind of develop their own scope and direction and still be associated with the Black Lives Matter larger movement is good because in history you've seen when there has been national leadership of, you know, older civil rights organizations that when there was a group that did not agree with the national mission statement and the national direction and when somebody from up yonder in a leadership position was choosing, you know, the issue or the incident to focus on, those groups fractured off and they did their own thing and they created new groups, which, again, it may have been positive, but there was definitely cons. So if we're just speaking about keeping the movement unified, I think probably this approach is doing more to keep the larger movement unified than having a national, like, direction.
Okay. Now, I hear you. So CNN, they had, I think it was like 4 or 5 reasons why it's going to fail. And they just kind of made a list and explained each one. The next one goes on to say, here's something else that's striking about Black Lives Matters is that the movement is filled with passionate and eloquent speakers. But can anyone name a great speech or even memorize a soundbite by Black Lives Matters leader?
Okay, but who name any organization and do that? PETA? Like, who? Yeah. Like, whatever. Okay,
right,
next.
No. They go on to say, sorry, I got to finish it. They said, one speech and one image that does come to mind is the electrifying speech by actor and activist Jesse Williams defending Black Lives Matters at a recent, well, then recent, BET Awards. But there's little sense that yet... Or there's little sense yet that Black Lives Matters has consistently come up with the type of reassuring language that has traditionally moved skeptical white Americans.
Oh.
Wait. Let me get the last sentence out. It is a language King spoke to goad them into action, one historian says. They didn't mention who this historian was. Your thoughts, make us
so perfect. Again, it goes back to, and I can tell you that probably, you know, I would bet money that the person that wrote this was not Black. Again, the onus is put on us to cater and reassure white people. Like, fuck that. Like, we don't need to. This is a movement about our community. Yes, we need allies. But honestly, like, we may not need your support. Like, if there are certain strategies that could be employed that don't rely on changing the hearts of middle of the road white Americans, and that's why a lot of people gave Hillary Clinton flack when there was that footage of her on the campaign trail when I believe that they were associated with Black Lives Matter met with her, and she was very pragmatic and said, you don't change hearts, you change legislation. And I fully believe that the racist or the prejudiced who likes to say that they're colorblind, middle class white American is not going. I mean, they might be moved by a rousing speech from a King figure, but what ultimately does their feeling about the speech have to do with changing actual practices and institutions and legislations? If they were not involved, they probably won't be involved. And so, again, that narrative that white America needs to be reassured, like, honestly, fuck white America, because if you're not involved, if the images of seeing children slain by police and average regular white citizens hasn't moved you, then frankly, fuck you if an eloquent speech on a national platform does.
Okay. No, I got nothing for that. We're just gonna let that soundbite be out there. If you want to sample that for your next hip hop that skit's gonna be on the next Dom Kennedy album.
Damn, I'm gonna do no better than Dom Kennedy.
Shout out to Dom Kennedy. Do you remember that speech, the Jesse Williams speech?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, when he told them to sit down. Yeah, I remember.
Be humble. All right.
But I think, and also I do disagree with that. Also in the sense that I do think there have been iconic moments of this.
Name
I
one.
Think, well, I'm not just going to like list them.
No. I wasn't challenging you.
Especially
I was
like Ferguson, like the Time cover of, you know, the riot and, well, what people want to call a riot. But I think that you get to a point where civil disruption can be a useful strategy. So there is that. I even think looser associations with things that are aligned with this movement, like the young lady who removed the Confederate flag. Like, I think that there have
been highlights.
There have been definitely more iconic moments than I can associate with any other current valid movement with steam at this current time.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. Sorry, we're going to continue with CNN. I'm just I you have to understand.
If you have see, who wrote this?
What? I didn't get the name. I didn't get the
I'm
name.
I'm going to need you to offline, like, get me the name, because I'm writing a scathing email.
All right, I got, I'll send you the hyperlink. So, it goes on to say, another reason why it will fail, according to this person, who I will send a hyperlink to.
Or it's Smurf. It's a Bojangling
and
black
she's
going to
find up and pull up on a, mm-hmm. pull up on a kid. All right, so it says, Black protest movements have traditionally sought support from Black churches. It is the most potent and...
Oh, my God. Who is and
wait,
like an 80-year-old white man
let me finish.
In a white linen suit sitting on a porch with a mint julep? Like, who is this?
No, that's Colonel Sanders.
that is Colonel Sanders.
Shout out to Colonel Sanders. Actually, not shout out to Colonel Sanders, because Smurf was out here waxing on this Ezels.
And he has most things. He stole the recipe from a Black woman.
Damn it, man. It says, it goes on to say that the Black church is the most potent organizing force for political change in the Black community. It says, the famous slave rebellion was led by a Black preacher, Nat Turner.
Okay.
Wait.
I just, okay.
yeah. The Black church powered the civil rights movement led by King. Today, contemporary Black churches do everything from voting registration drives to educating people about Obamacare. It says the Black Lives Matters, or the Black Lives Movement. I don't know how they're doing this. This is poorly written. Though it is betting that Black protest movements can succeed without the explicit support of Black churches. While Black Lives Matters leaders work with individual Black churches and pastors, they say on their website that this current movement has a very different relationship to the church than the movements of the past. Your thoughts, Vegas Perfect.
It seemed like you
wanted something off your chest.
I just want to know who this person is that wrote this article, because it just seems so.
If you guys can see like the anger in Smurf's face,
it just seems
now.
Legitimately out of touch. Like, either this is like a younger non-Black person who just read up in a textbook about the civil rights movement of, you know, that peaked in the like in the 50s and 60s. Like, I don't know what they're referencing, but the fact of the matter is, I personally like that this particular movement is not heavily associated with Black churches. Again, you get into, you know, and this is, you know, I'm not a part of a Black church. I have been in the past, but there are issues within the Black church, and I think that this movement can be successful without the endorsement of these national leaders who probably were loosely involved or involved in some capacity with the civil rights movement of old. Like, they probably have ideas that don't align with this particular movement, because civil disruption and civil disobedience is a useful tool. And I don't know if that would be endorsed by certain members of Black church or Black leadership. I also know that this movement has been heavily inclusive of different communities or intersectional communities, specifically the LGBT community, that may not be welcomed into the Black church's perspective of this movement, or of the current issues affecting the Black community. So I just like the fact that it is separated out and not reliant on an endorsement from a Jesse Jackson type. You know,
talk about it.
Someone who, you know, I will never discredit this man's involvement with civil rights, but has some character issues that, you know, we can muse
about
if we want to, but I don't think it's important. I think that this crop of leaders, of local leaders, and you know, I think that there are some that you can consider national leaders, or at least a face for the movement, have their own ideas about what this movement is, and we should let them and the people that they are motivating and the communities that they're galvanizing to explore a new, fresh perspective. I don't think everything has to... There's not one approach that'll work. And I think that the Black church's involvement and their perspective in what civil rights looks like and what fighting for civil rights looks like may have worked in the past, and it may have value in certain aspects now, but I don't think that it is the tried and true approach. And I don't think that you need their endorsement to be successful. And I don't know why anyone would say that.
Yeah, that sounded very stereotypical. Like, when I read that last one, I was like, what the fuck does that have to do with
anything? It sounds like somebody who thinks that every Sunday, every black person is, like, in a church somewhere. And, I mean, there are many that are. Mm-hmm. But there are many that aren't, right. You know? And I think that there's some that are a part of both. But it's not reliant on that. And it's just like, who are you who wrote this article? Who are you?
Smurf is pulling up. She might Snapchat it.
I might, because this shit is just.
And by the way, what is your Snapchat if we wanted to throw that out there?
It's bang _EM Smurf.
And right. She got all this free smoke for you, whoever you are. She got free smoke. hashtag more life.
Let's just get through this motherfucker, this fuck boy or girl's last little statements.
All right,
is it that we're not singing Negro spirituals as we walk down the street?
Actually, that was the last one. We're moving on. If you got more to say, we can devote a whole episode to how you feel about your man. I was like, listen, I'm not being beaten. That's what that sound is. It's someone being beaten. Like, it's so angelic. No, it's someone being beaten. It's like, it's not. Yeah, it's terrible. Oh, God. Waiting. You know what's fucked up though? Every black person can hit that note. Waiting. everybody can do that grandmama hum. It's like, yeah, we all got it in us. Alright. So something interesting.
Thank God we're done with that.
Yeah, we're done. He said, so did you know that there's a website called Black Life Matters?
No, but I'm sure you're gonna tell me about it. Is this some fuck shit?
I don't. Well, we're gonna get to it. I'm just like, okay, Black Life Matters, and they work on their power principles. This is their mission statement. It's power principles, and power is an acronym for protesting, outreach, withdraw, encouraging, and reporting.
Okay. All right, so it doesn't sound like fuck shit. It's just the fact that you said, like, it's like, we're gonna.
That's what it's called. It's called Black Life Matters.
We're gonna piggyback off of something else. I don't know.
It does sound like a spinoff.
It sounds like if I bought the domain.
It sounds like Joey. You remember Joey from Friends?
That's like if I bought, like, UziVert.com. Because, like.
So it's not Lil Uzi. It's just. UziVert deck, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's, okay, anyway.
So you're not rocking with it.
It's like I don't know yet. I don't know yet.
Well, it's out there. It's out there. See, we're here to entertain the people. Education or edutainment. Shout out to KRS-One.
Oh, I think my flat, I think it's, oh no, I got a little bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna need you to save that. We got about two more pages.
Oh, shit. Oh, damn.
No, we go. Actually, you may start wandering into this because the root goes on to talk about our current commander-in-chief, President Trump. It says...
We don't say... It's he who shall not be named or number 45.
So, the root goes on to say, number 45 is eyeballing a Milwaukee... I can't never pronounce the city's
Milwaukee.
Name. Milwaukee.
No, that sounds like something...
It sounds mad racist.
Yeah. It sounds mad racist.
I apologize. So he is eyeing that city's
damn Milwaukee's.
He's eyeing that city's sheriff, and this sheriff apparently called the Black Lives Matters a terrorist movement for a top post at the Department of Homeland Security. His name is Sheriff David Clark Jr., and he's an early Trump endorser, and he has made headlines in the past for his statements about Black Lives Matters activists, including a 2015 tweet in which he predicted the movement would join forces with the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, also known as ISIS.
That's called white fear. Says, that's what that is.
It says... three sources told Politico that Clark is being considered for assistant secretary at the Office of Partnership and Engagement at Homeland Security,
nice.
A position that does not require Senate confirmation.
This is why voting matters. I just want to say, this is why voting matters. Like, y'all want to
say, this
talk
is what the root
about,
says.
No, I get it. I just want to take this moment to, like, put out a PSA for our listeners. Like, I got so frustrated during the election about people who were not engaged or who wanted to vote for a third party candidate, which whatever, that's your right to do so. But I think that you really need to consider that if you let certain people in office, which I feel like we let this man in office, that there are consequences of the executive office. This man is taking a blatantly, is considering a blatantly, if he hasn't already been put, because I don't know when this article was written.
I should have put the time.
But who was at least being considered for a prominent position that has downstream consequences for that Black community. Like, this is why voting matters. You say, I heard the argument, it had no impact on me, it won't affect my life, who's in the office, who's the president. Voting matters. And if you don't vote and if you don't have your voice heard, then you are as part of the problem as these ignorant ass Trump supporters. So I will get off my soapbox and expect y'all to do better in 2018 in the midterm elections, to do your research, to secure at least one segment of the three branches. So we have a possibility that we could take over that Democrats, and I don't care how you feel about them, but they are the only thing stopping the racist white ring party that is the Republicans. And so
alt-right, right? It's called the alt-right.
I don't care because there's a subset who is blatantly alt-right, but the Republicans, what is good about them is that they are lockstep. A directive goes out and they all get motherfucking lined. So if it's all Republicans at this point. So we need to take over the House in 2018. I need all y'all little motherfuckers to get out there if you are voting age and vote. And if you don't, I don't fuck with you. Smurf does not fuck with you. And if I see you, it's on site. And you will catch these hands. Okay. All right. So anyways, moving on.
Pull up photo kids.
There's a lot of gems in this episode. I didn't know that there was going to be all these gems.
I didn't know you were so passionate about this. This is good. So this goes on. This kind of just led me down a rabbit hole. If you notice, like, I started up top,
you got out of Wikipedia hole.
Yeah, and I was just like, man, you
were just clicking on links.
No, I was sitting right. I was just clicking shit. I was like, man, you could really like go down this hole, right? So I went and I found this website. I didn't find this website, but on whitehouse.gov, mm-hmm. where you can submit petitions.
Sure.
There's a petition that's out there to formally recognize Black Lives Matters as a terrorist organization. Its defense of this is that terrorism is defined as the use of violence and intimidation in pursuit of political aims. The definition is the same definition used to declare ISIS and other groups as terrorist organizations. Black Lives Matters has earned this title due to its violent actions in multiple cities and their influence in the killing of multiple police officers throughout the United States. Mm-hmm. This group has already been described as a hate group because of its racist and police-hating actions by that city's Sheriff David Clark, a speaker at last year's RNC, Republican National Convention. It is time for the Pentagon to be consistent in its actions. And just as they rightfully declared ISIS a terrorist group, they must declare that Black Lives Matters terror group, or that the Black Lives Matters is a terror group on the grounds of principle, integrity, morality, and safety. Before you say anything that you want to say, I just wanted to note that this petition has been archived because it did not meet the signature requirements and it can no longer be signed. But what say you?
Well, you know, that definition of terrorist organization is interesting. I just want to know, are we then going to classify several police departments across the country as terrorist organizations? Because it
are certain churches? Because the Christian community has done a lot. They've done a lot. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I just would really focus. I just really feel like, you know, even the SPD might meet some of those criteria for a terrorist organization. I think it's people that don't understand movements and people that don't understand that with anything, again, with Islam, you know, ISIS, a terrorist organization, maybe, but the fact that they try to put that on the whole Muslim community is ridiculous, because if, right. with everything, you're going to have fundamentalists or you're going to have extremists. Mm-hmm. And there are people who, again, who have invoked the name Black Lives Matter to do things that certain people disagree with. So specifically the Dallas police officer shootings. But there's also, again, a component of mental illness involved in that. And I don't think that you can take isolated incidents and then label a whole group of terrorist organizations. And if you want to be real, in the United States, the most active group of domestic, no, the most active type of terrorism is domestic. Mm-hmm. And it is done by white males. So, like, the fact that people are so uneducated to think that because there was one man in Dallas who did X, Y, and Z, that the whole organization, again, all this is white fear. White fear and white tears. And I'm not...
So talk about white fear.
White fear is the... I mean, really, I think it's people that, even if they don't want to acknowledge their privilege, understand that whiteness has been the default. Whiteness has provided privilege. Whiteness has been the institution. It is what the founding fathers cloaked themselves in. Whiteness has been the pillar of really every institution in the United States, and they are scared that that time is coming to an end. And I think that's where you see why we have 45 in office. There is a subset of the white community that is terrified that they will no longer be the dominant ethnic group, that they will no longer be the dominant in the political system, mm-hmm. that they will lose basically the power that they recognize that they have, but they don't want to acknowledge. And they are taking extreme measures to drive us back to 1776 and prior. So this is extreme. And you're seeing this all across the globe. You're seeing this in the European Union. You're seeing this in multiple places where whiteness is being challenged and there are people who cannot adapt. And my thing is adapt or die. Like, if you can't fucking evolve to meet the current climate, then you serve no purpose. So, and that sounds like an endorsement for genocide, and it's not. I'm just saying that this to me.
Listen, can
is
we go one episode without? I don't think we could do one episode without us invoking violence.
I'm just saying again, like this, that whole little blurb that was like the embodiment of white fear.
Okay.
So let's restrict our borders. Let's spend billions of dollars building a wall. Like, white fear of others, of difference, of changing the balance of power. White fear. Y'all need to come to terms with that, because it's not going to be like this forever. Y'all having your last stand right now, but you really need to come to terms. You really do. Or buy an island somewhere.
Airbnb. Listen, now I understand why you were like, I don't want to do this episode, because Smurf had all this free smoke. She had all this free smoke for this. She is here for this. So again, this led me down the rabbit hole, and I was like, terrorists. This movement is being labeled as terrorists. We've now,
like,
had an article.
Did you like structure this to get me like increasingly upset?
1,000. This was not structured whatsoever. I just have random questions. Okay. And I was just kind of like, let's just keep going. But like, I kept falling into rabbit holes. So that's why somebody's
having a problem. Because we're getting to a point where I'm about to go out into my car and get my nap.
Again, this episode is sponsored by Pull Up Auto Kit. Who sings that song, by the way?
Is that this Young Thug?
That's Young Thug. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. I put the main on to Young Thug today. She's like, I fucks with it. I was like, right? So the rabbit hole led me to...
Gosh damn, do I have any more?
Listen, I'm gonna need you to handle those tremors. We need visual so badly.
Oh,
all right.
Shit. Okay.
So right. It led me to Tommy Lauren. Do you know who Tommy Lauren
is? Oh yes. No, I can't, bro.
No, wait.
I can't.
Let me go. Let me go. She talks about Black Lives Matter, and I was like, all right, let's talk about it.
She's a fucking troll, and I will tell you that she has no actual position. She's completely self-interested, but it's fine. Go ahead.
All right. So for those who don't know who Tommy Lauren is, she is an American conservative political commentator and television host. This is according to Wikipedia. She is best known for hosting Tommy on The Blaze. She previously hosted On Point with Tommy Lauren on One America's News Network, or OAN. So apparently Lauren garnered widespread attention in 2016, with the New York Times describing her as a rising media star and the BBC calling her the young Republican who is bigger than Trump on Facebook. One reason for that would be that in July 2016, Lauren wrote a tweet comparing the Black Lives Matter movement to the Ku Klux Klan. The tweet was, "Meet the new KKK. They call themselves Black Lives Matters, but make no mistake, their goals are far from equity." Apparently, tens and thousands of people signed a change.org petition in response and asking for her to be fired from the Blaze. This petition was also unsuccessful. So you don't fucks with Tomi Lahren, I'm assuming.
I don't see it for her. I don't. She's another.
She gained widespread attention and was known and was called by the BBC News the young Republican who is bigger than Trump on Facebook because she compared Black Lives Matter to the Ku Klux Klan.
The first time.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. just want to let that sink in.
To me, you know, just in the exposure I've had to this bitch.
Whoa.
She doesn't really have a platform. She's more interested with being the next media star in the alt-right or the right, whatever you want to call it, community. And you know she was actually suspended from the Blaze. You want to know why?
Because she talked about that she was for abortion. She was pro-choice.
Right. So bitch, you really don't even when you want to express your views, you can't because you're working for news organizations that don't allow that sort of thing. So good luck to her and Godspeed. I don't really have any words for her beyond the fact that she, she's just continuing the trend of giving credence and credibility to unsubstantiated white fear and white tears. And I'm just not here for it. Like, you're going to hear me say white fear and white tears, like, for the rest of the episode. Like, it's bullshit. When you ask people for evidence, yeah, it could be the name of this episode. When you ask people for evidence or solid facts beyond anecdotal relationships between, yeah. You know, it's funny that you say the new KKK when you have people that Trump and you know, Republicans holding various different positions in politics have open and known about associations with the Ku Klux Klan, but you want to call a group who does not have known associations with terrorist organizations or even conduct themselves to endorse or not say anything about violence against police officers, violence against the white community, whatever you want to call that. You want to call us a terrorist organization, but I mean, really, then the Republican Party is a terrorist organization. Like, I just don't understand.
Damn it, man. Damn it, man. She said the Republican Party.
It is. I understand. Yes, there are fiscal. Yes, I understand the tenets. Like, when you're talking about economics, yes, there is a Republican point of view for that. Yes, you can. It is valid point of view to not want to put money into safety nets and social programs. I get that. Do I think it's fuck shit? Yes. But do I get it? Yes. But the Republican Party has gained notoriety from associating themselves with groups of people who value at the end of the day their whiteness and their place in this country because of their whiteness. They've catered to low income and uneducated whites when the actual principles of the Republican Party don't match the needs and concerns of that demographic. Like, they're exploiting racists and they're exploiting low income poor whites and they are exploiting the Christian community when it has nothing to do with it. So now, yes, you have a party of fuck shit individuals, dumb ass motherfuckers who are a terrorist organization. Like, I don't see it for y'all. I don't. And yes, does the Democratic Party have their issues and do they have racists? Yes, they do. But y'all have taken it to another level. So up against the wall, motherfucker.
We coming to take what's on. Listen, I was thinking about the other day. I was tired of shit. And you know what came to my mind? I was like, you know what? I haven't been this tired since I went to all that camping trip, man. That lady was up there singing at her poem or some shit. And I knocked out the first fucking
She was talking about something about a river and... Oh God, that was awful.
Look, I conked the fuck out
in the front, row. Like, but not even like, not even like a cute like to the side, like lean your head on your shoulder, fall asleep. It was full on head cocked all the way to the back, mouth open. You don't understand, because I was several rows behind you, and I look up, and like everybody's head is just upright, and I'm like damn near making eye contact with you because your head is so far laid back. I was like, hey,
listen, you have to understand, people, I didn't eat that whole weekend. The food was terrible. It was like jail food.
Struggle. Like, that was like,
look, the cabins were cold.
There was no heat. There was no insulation. I remember hearing the wind whistling through the cabin one night. I was like, what the fuck is this? You didn't get a good night's sleep.
There were no showers. It was just...
It was all bad. Why did they let us go to that?
It was so fucked up. It was the worst weekend of my life.
You know, I bet it was like...
I was like, this is what jail feels like.
Did you see about that that festival?
The what?
That festival, that Ja Rule festival where them people were trapped on an island.
No.
Okay. We'll talk about it later. But that's what EOC was like.
Damn it, man. Coopville. Fucking
Coopville. Classics, man. Shoes and Socks came out of Coopville.
Shoes and Socks, it's a fucking hit. If you don't know about that, if you ain't our type, well, no, yeah. So what I started to realize, this is the rabbit hole I started going down, which I'm noticing now, is that they were like, okay, so we now know that Black Lives Matter is popular, right? It's not like some underground thing. It's part of pop culture, right? So it led me down this rabbit hole, and you know when you like just click a link and then below there are more links and then below there, so I kept doing that. It's like the YouTube effect. And so there was an article by the New York Times about Pepsi's commercial.
Oh my god, Kendall Jenner. Bro, I don't have enough alcohol. I don't have enough.
But here's the thing though, it was like, wow, this Black Lives Matter is attached to so many things, like I just never thought about this, right?
Pepsi, it wasn't even like honestly, it wasn't even offensive because it was so ridiculous.
All right. Well, let me get to it. So the New York Times, April 5th, 2017, I timestamped this one. See, I was getting better. It says, Pepsi has apologized for a controversial advertisement that borrowed imagery from Black Lives Matter movements after a day of intense criticism from people who said that it trivialized the widespread protest against the killings of black people by the police. Pepsi said, Pepsi was trying to protect a global... Pepsi was trying to project a global message of unity, peace, and understanding. Clearly, we have missed the mark and apologized. The company said in a statement on Wednesday, we did not intend to make light of any serious issue. We are pulling the content and halting any further rollout. The ad posted to YouTube on Tuesday shows attractive young people holding signs with non-specific pleas like
join the conversation.
That's
the one they killed.
No,
me.
That's the one they said, like, join the conversation. The protesters
and
are,
a peace sign.
They said the protesters are uniformly smiling, laughing, clapping, hugging, and high-fiving.
It was like I'm sorry.
All right. In the ad's climactic scene, a police officer accepted a can of Pepsi from Kendall Jenner, a white woman, setting off ruckus approval from the protesters and an appreciating grin from the officer. It was, current activists say, precisely the opposite of their real world experience when protesting police brutality. You weren't offended? You weren't offended?
No, I think there was a version of that I would have been offended, but that one was just so fucking over the top that it was like, what the fuck is this?
So how,
like,
did you catch wind of it? Because this is a huge thing.
It was just social media. Like, it was
United,
like,
punching you in the face.
It was just like, I forgot exactly how I caught wind of it, but it was definitely like within the day that it was released. And because just everybody was talking about, oh, this is how I did. They started doing the memes on Instagram where it was like Dr. King in handcuffs and it was like, and his daughter was even like, damn, too bad he didn't have the Pepsi.
I saw that one. I started. I was like, you guys are too wrong for that. I was like, you guys are terrible. The internet gives zero fucks, by the way.
The internet is so great. And that was definitely one of the times. And then I watched it and I just honestly was like my mouth was open the whole time. I was like, what the fuck? Like, come on, Pepsi. Like, you had to know. Like, this was not going to be the wave. Like,
They said, we got Kendall Jenner. She's dating, like, somebody who's black.
Do something else. Like, try something else. Like, because now, like, the whole thing is, like, we're going to make our our products and our messages for these corporate entities. We're going to make it more meaningful and talk about social issues. But this is not what you're going to do, because in this particular, associating yourselves with the Black Lives Matter movement and making it about Pepsi, like you've completely marginalized it. And then like, if we were going to, like, my thing is like, Pepsi, if you wanted to take it there, then you should have took it there. You try to do this like completely rooted in delusion, like, view of what actual protest is. Like, none of it made sense. Like, first of all, it was like a music festival. It was like really, really
like Coachella.
It was like a Coachella in the streets, yeah. Right? And then like, what did the man playing the bass have? Like, and, oh, and like the diversity. And it was like the man playing the bass and the Muslim woman taking photos, and people were like really happy in the streets with signs and said, join the conversation. And there was two Black men like b-boying. And no, I'm like, no, seriously. And like, and then Kendall Jenner, and then like, it just was completely unrealistic. Like, the cops looked more like mall security. Like, no, at protest, they're in riot gear,
right,
throwing tear gas and pepper spraying people and beating people with billy clubs. Like, I'm sorry, like, this is what fucking protest is and these types of situations. And for her to be like, no, I'm gonna push myself to the forefront of this issue and hand this motherfucker a Pepsi, and for him to crack it, and for the crowd to literally cheer,
just explode. Would you rather have the explosion or the single just
there's several iterations of that commercial that could either made it better or worse. I feel like I should have seen a slow clap. But I will say, usually the slow clap is the most dramatic of them all, but the explosion, like the jubilant explosion, that was pretty fucking ridiculous too.
But the elation, Kendall. So do you feel Kendall Jenner had anything to do with the backlash?
Oh, I don't think she knew what the fuck she was doing. I mean,
No, not intentionally, but I mean the fact that it was Kendall Jenner, do you feel that added to the backlash and why people were so resentful?
Yeah, I think so.
Why do you feel that it being her?
I mean, again, it's, since there was such a close correlation with Black Lives Matter, I mean, this is a woman who, I mean, you know, you talk about cultural appropriation and her and her sisters at the forefront of that. I mean, I think it did probably add a little bit of it. Like, she doesn't care about Black issues. She's never been vocal about saying Black Lives Matter. I mean, she exclusively, it appears, dates Black dudes. It just seems like very, like, sketchy. So, yes, associating a Kardashian Jenner with this particular commercial, which is so definitely borrowing themes and images from Black Lives Matter movement, was problematic. I don't think it was the most problematic thing, but it was problematic.
So, all right, well, we want to be solution oriented, right? We always try to be solution oriented here at Speaker Box Seattle podcast. So if Pepsi wanted to be supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement,
then stay the fuck out. Like, don't use it to sell Pepsis. Like, how ridiculous does that sound? Like, how is there any way where they would use those images or try to hint at an association with that type of movement with selling a Pepsi? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just inherently problematic. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you wanted to just donate some money to the movement, or if you wanted to put on your can, like, something supportive. I don't know what their approach was, but definitely not invoking images and themes and feelings to like sell a Pepsi.
You know, it would be dope if they sold BML cans, right? And the proceeds went to several different chapters of the Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, but they would never in a billion years.
No,
they
would
that.
Never do that, because that is PR nightmare, right? But
this was pretty bad. I mean, people are
yeah,
still,
but you can bounce back.
People
from
are
that.
Still drinking Pepsis, but.
Yeah, but I feel like with Pepsi, if you...
Somebody did a meme of like, exactly, every 35 years, Pepsi fucks up. And it was the one where Michael fell out of the perfect hair.
He said, wait for it, next 35 years. That dude said, I'm here!
Oh, shit. The internet, man.
Oh, the internet gives zero fucks. All right, so... So I thought, like, I was like, okay, well, obviously, fucking it being Kendall Jenner definitely didn't help.
No, it didn't help.
So I found out that according to the Daily Caller, So the Black Lives Matters Philly chapter banned white people from an upcoming event, claiming that it is black only. It's a black only space. The April 15th meeting plan is to discuss projects and initiatives for the upcoming year and act as a place for people to meet, strategize, and organize. While children are invited to attend, white people are explicitly banned from this meeting, according to the Facebook event page. When people begin questioning the ban over whites over Twitter, Black Lives Matters Philly stayed by their ban, explaining that their meetings are black-centered. So how do you feel about white people contributing to Black Lives Matters? Because apparently Kendall Jenner's not the one that you that you want support from.
I think that there is value and a time and a place for allies.
And I find it interesting because, like, at the beginning, it was like, oh, well, you don't speak the language of white people, but, like, some white people do get it. Like, some people, white people are about that life, but it's like, so how do they contribute?
Well, they're about the idea of that life. You know what I'm saying? If you're not directly impacted by something, if you don't have the actual experiences, like, we have shared experiences, right, you and I, because we're both black in the city. Your experience is a little different than a black male. My experience is a little different than a black female, but we definitely have the same kind of overarching ideas about police brutality and black issues, right? But what led to that is that we've both had negative experiences with the police. We've both been in predominantly white spaces for a lot of our lives. Mm-hmm. We have those experiences. A white person does not have those experiences. So they're going to have other experiences, which might be valid for different things. But for this particular issue, when we're talking about the black community and police brutality against the black community, I completely understand why this particular chapter would not want involvement from people who can be allies and be supportive. But as far as understanding and adding to the conversation as someone who has experienced the injustices typically directed towards that population, that there's nothing for you to say. There's no reason for you to be there. And I think that a lot of people do not know how to be an ally. They want to dominate the conversation when they should just be there to listen and support. I think the most compelling visual I saw of whites acting as an ally to Black Lives Matter is when there was a group, and I'm sorry, I forgot. And I know they've done this.
Was it Macklemore?
It was definitely not Macklemore. And I'm sure that they've done this in various cities, but there was one, I don't remember what city it was, but there was a group of black protesters and the white allies who had come to that protest. Well, I should say that there was police there present in SWAT gear, and the white allies surrounded the black protesters and joined hands and linked arms to create a barrier between them and the police. That is being a fucking ally.
That's dope.
That is dope. Like, that to me that. Was like a visual of what an ally is. You are not walking up to the mantle. You are not screaming. You are not the ones laying down with tape over your mouth on the ground with signs that say Black Lives Matter. You are there to support and to protect, and that is it. And just like the black community will be called and has been called before to be allies to different movements, I just think that there's so many times, like Macklemore, you know, that's a great example of someone who doesn't understand how to be an ally to a movement. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if we even want to take it further, co-ops movements for personal gain, but whatevs.
What about Iggy Azalea? Do you think that she...
I don't talk about trash.
Shade. Smurf has got all of this free smoke. So, the name of this episode is free smoke.
I just think that there should probably be education on what being an ally means. Because I think especially a lot of well-meaning white activists don't understand. Case in point, we actually had a direct experience with that. Do you remember up at Western? So Frank and I went to college together. If you're a new listener, you wouldn't know that. But if you're an old listener, you know.
If you were the day ones.
And if you're not, you can sit the fuck down.
J. Cole's been getting... I feel like every season we find somebody and we target them. And this season is J. motherfucking Cole.
Because I'm tired, man. I'm tired of him telling me that shit. Okay, so we were both a part of the BSU, the Black Student Union, and you know there was a social
shout out to
BSU. That was a dope BSU, and then we left and went to trash. It started going to trash with us.
listen, shout out to the current.
I think BSU. I saw them in the news.
Yeah.
Anywho. So there was the BSU, and so we did some like activism stuff, you know. But then there was the Anti-Racist White Student Union.
Talk about it. Did they do it right or did they do it wrong?
I think they were well-meaning. I think that they were young people who were at a liberal arts college who had good intentions. But they just overstepped their boundaries. And I remember the one instance that I was really like, what the fuck is happening? Is when they were like, in my head, this is what happened. I'm sure this is not how it went down. I feel like they like busted into the BSU meeting talking about, you guys, we need to take to the streets. And we were like, what's going on? Like, what happened? And they were like, we're organizing a protest. Fred Meyer is refusing to sell ethnic hair care.
They were saying hair food, right? Yeah, no, black hair care products.
Hair care products that they would not stock black hair care products. Now, mind you, this was an issue for us because we were like, nah, it's cool because like
Sally's is down the street.
Sally's is down the street and Walgreens got some, like, we Gucci. And they were like, no, it's an injustice. Okay, an injustice for who? Like, who are we talking about? Like, you didn't ask for this? We didn't ask for this. But now you're acting as a representative of our voices. Like, you are overstepping your boundaries as an ally. You're not, like, real shit. Allies there are to protect and to support, to play the fucking background, to play your position. And there's value in that. But once you start deciding that you will become the voice for someone else, and then you get into the whole thing about privilege, too. Like, because why did you even think that you were qualified to speak on the behalf of black people when you have absolutely no understanding what the real issues are? Clearly, because you didn't know there was a Sally's down the motherfucking street.
And you didn't hear us saying, we good. We're good, my G.
Like, we're good.
We appreciate you.
Like, we, you know, we appreciate the zeal. Like, we appreciate you being outraged on our behalf, but we do not need you to speak on our behalf or to take action, because then you get the whole thing fucked up, because then there's other people that are going to look at that and think that those are the issues that we're concerned about. And we weren't concerned about that. So if you mad because they don't have the products for your fake ass dreads, then that's one thing. Call it that. Call it that. But don't try to make it a black issue. You know, and that's the thing. I just think that some of y'all would do well to be more educated about the role of an ally. Macklemore. And the Anti-Racist White Student Union, which I'm sure is not around anymore.
And that was today's episode of Free Smoke. No, we might have to change the name of the podcast. All this free smoke. All right. So there's that. Oh, so then, yeah, I really didn't have this organized. So this is a nice little tidbit. So Mercury News reported that, I do not know how to pronounce this name, it's Ziad. Anything? Any guesses? Okay. So Ahmed, so what's called Mr. Ahmed, because I can say that. So Mr. Ahmed, a high school senior in New Jersey, okay, yeah, they definitely didn't write this.
Yo, Frank is that one motherfucking
class. Damn it, man. My name is, no. All right, so Mr. Ahmed, a high school senior in New Jersey, was attempting to gain acceptance to the university, meant writing a usual answer to this question.
Oh, on application form. What and all he said was, why? Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter.
Exactly.
My G.
He said Black Lives Matter, which he wrote 100 times without additional comments. After he announced his admission to the school by posting a screenshot of the answer on Twitter, the news went and became viral. That's cool. That's dope. So you heard of this story?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How'd you hear about it?
National news.
How do you feel about that? Because we were talking about support the right way. So for him to be that bold and write that answer, I read the article. He was like, I didn't think I was going to get in anyway. So I just kind of wrote how I felt, and he ended up getting in. Because of that. I don't think it was because of that, though. Like, I'm sure he had the grades.
I'm not going to lie. Okay, that might catch some flack for this. I'm not going to lie. At first, I was a little... I thought it was dope. Okay, I'm going to say that. I thought it was dope. And I know that he probably didn't go out looking for, you know, national media attention. But I did, a part of me did kind of question motive on that. And also wondered, was he involved in the Black Lives Matter movement as an ally? I don't know. So so I saw it. I thought it was dope. And again, it's something else that raised awareness and propelled Black Lives Matter back into the national spotlight. But sometimes people do strange things. So I guess I didn't do my due diligence to do more research on this young man. But as far as just taking it for face value, dope. Dope.
Yeah, I thought it was dope.
But now, young man, if you chose to say that was the most important thing for you to write, it is the only thing that was important.
You kind of have to back that up.
You kind of had to back it up now. Especially because you it was part of the reason why you were admitted to school, that you did not think that you were going to get admitted. And so I hope that you continue... whatever it was that you were previously doing or whatever it is that you plan to do to add to that movement.
Yeah. All right. So what now? Like, what do you feel are steps towards progression, or what do you feel like is going to happen next? What's the next frontier? What does Black Lives Matters do moving forward? I'm not asking you to solve every problem. I'm just saying.
No, I just think that just the things that I think is just critiques that we've already talked about. I think that there are opportunities to be more organized, which I think that you know, like I said, the local leadership and the, you know, kind of loosely national leadership that they have recognizes that. I think more activism is great, but whatever that Black Life Matters group is, I think that they have a valid point that there's different.
Shout out to Black Life Matters.
That there is definitely a multi-pronged approach. Like activism, okay, so we've protested, so we've raised awareness. Now, what do we do with that awareness? And I think that's kind of where the movement is now. Thinking, what do you do? So now everybody knows about the issues. Now we have support of these issues. We have allies. But how do we turn that into capital? Mm. And so I think that now you're seeing, like, DeRay ran for mayor. I think that was an unsuccessful, but it happened. There's a young lady in Seattle who's running for mayor. And I think that...
You talking about Nikita Oliver?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think that
Shout out to Nikita Oliver.
Sorry, I should have shouted her name out. But I think that having political power is important. Having a seat at the table, having a voice in these policy conversations is important, because to me, as someone who is really interested in policy and who went to school studying policy and legislation, I think that you need to have something to back up what you're fighting for. You need to have laws on the books to do certain things. You need to have people in positions of powers to get to meet some of the things on your agenda. So I think that's where it's at now, and I like what I'm seeing. And I think just learning and evolving and keeping on the same trajectory, because I think it's good, because it's been several years now. Like, I remember, again, sorry to harp on
2012.
It. 2012. So it's been five years going on six, which is great, because I mean, I'm sorry to like talk about Occupy Wall Street so much, but like I was like literally there for at the school when I transferred to UW. There was like a camp across the street that was like, it was like where all the protests went down. And it was like so amazing to see, like, right, mm-hmm. when that whole national, when people were just so fucking fed up that they literally like stumbled into the streets to yell at the sky because they were so pissed.
What do you want from me?
Right. But then it just devolved so rapidly. Like, it literally turned into a homeless camp, which the city had to come and shut down. And that was within months. If, like, three fucking months, you know? And so for it to be 5 going on 6 years later and we're still talking about Black Lives Matter, that's amazing. Like, I hope it's something that until the day comes that we don't need to say it to y'all motherfuckers anymore, I hope to continuously hear this, and I hope that it, you know, that maybe it just evolves in the way that it needs to evolve, you know? And I think that's what is so great about these young leaders, is that they are letting it do that, you know? They're not saying, well, this is how Dr. King and the NAACP and SNCC and even more militant groups like the Panthers, like, this is how they do it, so we need to do it. No, they're borrowing ideas from those, you know, monumentous movements and creating their own path too, and I just think it's great.
No, I agree with that. some capital and some funding. And yeah, no, I agree with that. I think what would be dope is a very large single act of solidarity. I think that would be good, right?
Like we all like stand around with Pepsi
cans. Yeah, like we all stand around Pepsi cans. And, oh my God, what if that would be so dope? Because it would be so satirical, right? We would just all walk around with Pepsi cans and be like, listen, we can solve this issue with guns or with diabetes. What y'all trying to do? It's like, what? Those are both terrible options. No, but no, like just a single act of solidarity, like the women's movement, right?
Yeah.
Like women all over the fucking country were out marching and mm-hmm. it was great. It was beautiful and it was dope to see, right? I feel that if we did that, if we had that same energy to show a solid movement mm-hmm. or just to see like how many people are out there, even if it's sporadic, even if it's just one day, one moment, 1 hour, like everybody either hashtags it or no, not necessarily hashtags it, but like meets up at a center and holds up a sign, you know, or a one giant movement. I think that would be dope just to see who is about that life.
I mean,
about that life enough to show up to the fucking event.
Then you get into the thing, like if you're talking about a national event, I mean, the fact of the matter is there's socioeconomic issues that affect the Black community, so can everybody afford to go to that? And you don't want to make it, and I'm not shitting on your idea or anything, I'm just
but
saying
you
like,
are for all this free, but all of this free smoke, all of this free, she said I would like your idea, but I got all of this free, I got a box of free smoke back there that needs to get unpackaged, sir.
And I think that there has been signs of solidarity like across the nation that probably didn't get as much media attention, like do you remember Black Friday? Not one black dollar on Black Friday.
Yeah.
The projections of that day came out and they were markedly down, and y'all know black people running to Walmart. And so there
I got a friend
been.
Who just him and his girlfriend, that's what they like to do. He's like yeah, when we're not doing much, we just go to Walmart and cruise. I said, what do you mean you cruise? He was like, yeah,
these
we
are real
on.
Things.
He said, we just go in there, we like look
and
at
don't
TVs,
y'all,
couches.
If we do have Hotep listeners, like don't come writing me emails.
Oh, they're coming for you.
About
so many people are coming for you.
Blah,
you called
blah,
out too
blah,
many
blah,
people.
Blah.
Oh, you gave out too
I don't,
much.
I don't give a fuck. If we talk about white fear and white tears,
any other hyperlinks you want me to send to you, let me know.
Any email that I get talking about, oh, you're racist against white people, da, da, the only reply that you get, if it is a reply, is going to be white tears and white fears. Like, you're part of the problem, don't...
We need to put that on a t-shirt, by the way. We need to put that on a t-shirt.
But, and then also, like, there's been moments of silence throughout the country, but I think these are things, again, I'm not sure if they're getting media attention because it's not provocative as burning down police cars, you know? It's not going to get as many ratings, you know, on the national platform, seeing like these more violent images, which again, people will muse on the merits of riots, but I probably have a pretty unpopular view about that, which we don't have to get into because I'm getting enough hate mail as is from this episode. But
you know what's funny is that as we're going through this episode, I was like, oh, we're going to get so much hate. Like somebody's going to feel a certain way.
Oh,
somebody's
yeah.
going to have an opinion about this one. We have one every season where we're just like, oh, this is going to strike some nerves.
But then again, it's just like, if you write me with a problem, like if you have like comments or feedback or whatever, or you want to present your point of view in a constructive way, that's fine, whatever. But at the end of the day, like, if you are trying to justify white fears and white tears, like, I don't have anything for you. Like, we'll never be friends.
And at the end of the day, Smurf has this box of free smoke. If you see the box, ladies and gentlemen, it's like Costco crate, all right? And it's just full of free smoke.
And I just roll around with it every day.
She's got to unload this free smoke.
I had to warn you, man. I told you. I was like, I don't know if we want to talk about this, but right. You wanted to talk about it.
Because you're like, I'm not going to hold back, and I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel about it. okay, so... Like Speaker Box, this is what we talk about, right? So,
yeah.
Is Black Lives Matter's fuck shit?
Oh, no, not at all. It's real. That's real shit. That's real shit. Like, and when I first heard it, I knew exactly what they meant. Like, I never was like, what? Like, not just black lives. Like, you know, like, it made
We need visual, people. We need visual.
It was not, it just made perfect sense. Like, it was literally like, we literally have to remind you guys that our lives matter, that our lives hold value, that you can't just murder us because you don't see the value in our lives. Our lives fucking matter. And this is a reminder of that. And I'm going to yell it from the motherfucking rooftops until, and I'm a protest, and fuck, I'll go to the mall and lay down and shut your shit down if I have to, be to remind you that my life matters, that our lives matter. So I am so here for it. It is so, I think just the way it was phrased, the way it became hashtagged, I really think it was brilliant. I can't think of another movement that had such a meaningful slogan to it. Like, it really, like, sums it up. Like, y'all motherfuckers need to remember. Y'all need to know.
Remember. Motherfucker. Remember. Worst behavior. I'm on my worst behavior. Don't you ever get it fucked up. Look, I'm not even a Drake fan, but when I heard that song, I was like, oh, this is crack.
There's
I was
a couple, like, this there's a couple. I'm not going to lie to you. When he does it, he does it. Like, there's a handful of Drake songs that move me to, like, screaming and crying ugly tears in my car.
Like that Duffel Bag Boy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Every day I go to work, I'm screaming and crying to Duffel Bag Boy. Like, tears just streaming down my face.
Like, go and get that money.
But yeah, that song, Worst Behavior, and Fake Love, man. Fake Love, because when he starts getting into it, and I'm like, that's when they saw my face. For real, if you've been around some fake motherfuckers, you know that shit hits home.
That hate is real?
That hate is real, man.
Damn it, man. Damn it, man. All right. Well, this was Speaker Box Seattle podcast.
Presenting Free Smoke.
We're going to give you a presenting Free Smoke live in 3D.
This episode was brought to you by
boxes of Free Smoke.
With every box of Free Smoke, you also get a smaller box of free L's.
Your L's not lasting long enough. Try to get a box of L's.
All right, man.
Hey, shout out to Donald Glover. Remember when Donald Glover put all the commercials on Atlanta?
Bro. Still one of the greatest episodes of TV I've ever seen.
But if you want some more of this box of free smokes with your side box of L's and a large shake, where can they go?
You can listen to all of our episodes on one of our three platforms, being iTunes, Podomatic, or Stitcher. If you want a one-stop shop for all that, plus some content and our social media accounts, go to our website, which is speakerbox.com. That is
S-P-K-R-B-X.
S-P-K-R-B-X.com.
So good.
And I don't even want to give out our email address.
Do it. Do it.
If you got something to say about a different episode, or, you know, just want to give me some really, really positive feedback about the things that have been said today, drop us a line at Frank's personal email.
No.
SpeakerBox Seattle. That's SpeakerBox, normal spelling, seattle@gmail.com. As always, please rate, comment, subscribe, especially if you're on iTunes. To our white listeners, I love y'all, man. I just had to get some shit off my chest. Keep being an ally to everything, you know, to movement. Keep being respectful of the movement and all that. I'm not a racist. I shouldn't have to say that, but I'll say it anyways.
Do you have white friends? Ooh.
Damn,
you don't forgot that one?
Literally have one white friend. I don't know where my life, because I used to have only white friends. When I went to, like, private school, I only had white friends.
Damn,
now I have,
man,
one white friend.
Damn,
like, that I can,
man,
consider, like, you know, my definition of friend is very stringent. I have, right, one of those.
You want to shout her out?
Is her name Token? It's Sarah Smith.
Shout out to Sarah Smith. Yeah, so if you have any positive comments, go ahead and send them our way. But if you have any negative comments, then what we have for you is this box of free smoke and a side of L's and a large shake. And as always, rate, comment, subscribe.
Yeah.
This is Frank Massachusetts.
And this is Megan Smurfett.
And we present to you, or we are unpresenting. Descenting? Nah. It's the end of the goddamn episode.
Get on. Go. Get.
Did you say your name? I didn't say my name. This is Frank Massachusetts.
No, you did.
Oh.
You all right?
Poetic justice. Remember? I'm hype. Can we get, yeah, never mind. All right. And we'll talk to y'all next time.